just the history, first of all, the history of capital punishment in Judaism, we know, goes all the way back to the Torah. There are over 30, I think 36 is the number that they give, 36 offenses that the Torah speaks about a death penalty, from murder to adultery, about Azara, Chilul Shabbos, so on and so forth. What's interesting about the history of the death penalty in Israel is that Israel inherited a law system, right? So 1936, British Mandate had instituted the death penalty, and that just kind of became part of the legal system in Israel. Now, they only carried out, there was only two death penalty convictions in 70 years. Only one was carried out.
Who was the other
Eichmann
one?
Was the one who was carried out. The other one was this guy, Daman Yuk. He was convicted of war crimes during the Holocaust. But it was turned out that it wasn't really him in the end of the story.
So he was convicted.
He was convicted. He was sentenced to death for war crimes, crimes against humanity, and it was overturned because they brought new evidence that showed that he hadn't done or wasn't involved in
assassinations instead of death penalties. Like, I'm saying, like, people, like, I mean, Kastner is like,
oh, I understand. Yeah. Like, yeah. I mean,
you know, the pre-Eichmann trial.
Right. So that in and of itself, I think, is something that's interesting. The law actually was changed in 1954. 1954, the death penalty was called repealed or limited to certain cases. And from that time on, now, recently, this is why I started thinking about this and looking into this more, they had a recent bill that was put forth in the Knesset to reinstate the death penalty. And it actually, the first reading, I think, passed. It was 5249.
So when was this?
Just in the last month or two. This was the terrorist in the Solomon family terror attack in the home in
one of the
what was the name? Chalamish. That was in 2017, but the guy was just convicted. So they had this vote. They introduced a bill that would allow death penalty for terrorism, and 52-49 was the in favor. So it just gives you a sense of how heated this topic is, but obviously halacha does have an interesting place in this discussion. So I just wanted to look at the question of when we don't have a Sanhedrin anymore, is there ever a permission for a governing body in a Jewish community to be able to carry out any type of punishment, whether it's execution or anything less than that. So if you look in the first source, it's the Gemara and Sanhedrin. This seems to be the foundational source for this discussion. And it's a Gemara that speaks about a Beis Din that is carrying out punishments that are not written in the Torah. So the example that the Gemara gives is a person was riding a horse on Shabbos, which is only an Isur Darabanan. Shema, you'll grab a branch and you'll be Mechal Shabbos by grabbing the branch, but it's a Darabanan, and they killed someone, stoned someone who had been riding on a horse on Shabbos, and the Svara that they give there was Shahashat Tzricha Lekach. Right, just had
it
in the
Haftarah,
right?
It's kind of like
the
Shad Hashmad concept also.
Right.
Like, it's more about the statement.
Very good. Very good.
I don't think that a Beit Din would, like, the Shad Hashmad stuff with, like, Yehereg Val Yavor, let's say. I don't think a Beit Din would kill you if you didn't.
Well, you have to accept death rather than do anything.
Correct, but if you didn't, let's say you didn't, I don't think you're chayav meet that Beit Din. I don't think. My gut is that you wouldn't be. If it's a Shad Hashmad and
purely, as the Gemara says, k'day lasot siyag l'Torah. They make a determination that if we don't do something,
right,
the whole thing is going to unravel, and the whole shmirat halacha is just going to fall away. We need to do something to strengthen the.
But the more that the shashat zricha l'kach like that.
Right. So we'll see in a minute how the Rishonim go in different directions on this. But the, a flip side of this is is the two pieces from the Gemara, one in Sanhedrin where it speaks about a Beitin that kills once in 70 years is a murderous Beitin, Sanhedrin. And then the Gemara that speaks about how 40 years before Churban, there were so many murders or so many murders going around, they like kind of stopped carrying out the death penalty.
I mean, it's impossible to convict. The right. level of hatshra'ah that you need
100%. Is like... So that the system in and of itself seems to push us toward seeing the death penalty as something that is technically what we would want to do, almost like an ayin tachad ayin kind of argument. But in reality, it's not something that we carry out. Although, when you learn through Masechet Sanhedrin from beginning to end, it is very clear that the Sanhedrin did carry out executions. There's stories that are written in the pages there, and it was a reality.
I'm only on Def Yud, but I can't imagine a conviction ever happening.
Yeah, and even that line that said there's so many murderers running around, so we can't do this anymore, basically means that we were doing it, starting now,
that's
it's...
That's what the Ron, I'm doing, you know, the Sanhedrin and the Ron on that section is talking about, like, how
I thought you meant the classic Drashot HaRan.
That's what I mean, Drashot HaRan, that Perikud Aleph. Yeah. And the idea, I mean, it's not really based on Sanhedrin, like, it's really based off of Parsha Shoftim, right. But, like, it references all the stuff in Sanhedrin, and he says that it's really hard to implement, but he gives a solution to it. Like, that's the difference. It's not like, oh, like, that's cute, let's just not have any death penalty. He does provide a way to do
right.
it.
Right.
That's
right.
The part we don't talk about.
Astrologically.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. No, we talked about that. That's talked about.
Yeah.
So we'll get to that. Yeah. We'll get to that in a minute. So the other Gemara that brings out this question and this issue is a Gemara that's also in Sanhedrin, just a few dapim later, and it's a story about a daughter of a Kohen who had committed adultery, an act of znut, and she was burned at the stake. Okay, literally, which is not the correct punishment for that act, and he was criticized. Amar Rav Yosef, the end of the first
What's
line. So Rav Yosef said about Rav Matna, well, it's Sreifa, but that's not what Sreifa is, right? That's not what Sreifa is. So he said Ta Bitarti. He actually made two mistakes. Ta Bid Rav Matna. He made a mistake. Sorry, it was Rav Chama Bar Tuvia who carried it out. And he said Rav Matna was the one who. Rav Matna is the Mandamer, the Gemara, who gives us the definition of what Sreifa is. And he was also Toa Bidatanya Ubatel Kohanim Alavim Al Shofet Shira Bimimahem Bazman Sheyesh Kohen Yesh Mishpat Bazman Sheyin Kohen En Mishpat, which is basically the Gemara that seems to say once you don't have a Beitin anymore, you can't carry out mitat Beitin. So the all the Rishonim ask, you know, so what do we do with the earlier Gemara? The earlier Gemara seems to say Onshin Shalom in HaTorah, and this Gemara seems to say that if you don't have a Sanhedrin, you can't carry out the executions. So the Nemuka Yosef just says that earlier Gemara, that's verse number 3, he says the earlier Gemara was actually the Sanhedrin, he was talking about the Sanhedrin, and it can't be that, you know, and it can't be that you would ever have a post-Sanhedrin body of power that could carry out these cards.
Why are we assuming that there wasn't a Sanhedrin then, especially when it says Bimei Yavanim? Like, why are we assuming that? I don't see
right.
what the problem is.
It's a good point. So that's the way the Mukha Yosef reads this. I think the reason why that assumption is made is because this idea of Shalom in HaTorah is not something that's usually discussed when we talk about the Sanhedrin.
And I don't understand your question. The first one, there was the Yimei Yevanim, and that's the one where there was the Sanhedrin. It's the second
one. I'm saying I don't even understand.
Right.
I totally saw it.
Yeah, if you look at the beginning, it's Vikashi Lachava, Kaimala,
Beiti, Makivon, Shemadin. I thought you were saying the opposite.
Yeah. If you look at Beiti in school, Yeshomer, the Hatam Sanhedrin Gedolahu, the Rav Guvraya, Val Beitin, Ba'almalo. So that was the Sanhedrin of Gadol. That's why they were able to do it.
Yeah.
In other words, if it was any other group, it's only the Sanhedrin of Gadol that would be able to carry out something that's not Minatara. That's the Nemuka Yosef. But pretty much all the other Rishonim do not agree with this Nemuka Yosef. Shouldn't say all, but most. The Rambam, for example, I didn't bring the Hebrew, but he pretty much codifies this Gemara in Sanhedrin as any court that would like to carry out the you know, post Churban, right, post Sanhedrin, to carry it out, would, again, a court of 23, if we would have such a thing, would be able to carry it out. Now there are many, many things that we're not going to have the time or the space on this source sheet to go into, like the question of smicha, like the question of makom goreim, which means the location of the Sanhedrin is what gives it and other courts the authority to.
You mean like Israel versus Kutz?
Being on Har Bayit, per se, right? Specifically,
there's a crazy Rosh that we read last year, where he's talking about how when he moves to Sfarad, they actually do implement, like, one time they implement, like, it's to do with, like, cutting off someone's tongue. It was the weirdest thing.
I mean the Ramah,
like, he freaks out.
Yeah, the Ramah speaks about it by Mosrim, right?
Yeah,
people that were really dangerous people in the community who were getting the whole community in trouble by telling on the government. So those measures of what the community is allowed to do to people like that are already spoken on Shulchan Aruch. I didn't bring it in the sources here. But you do have a body, a governing body called the Tovei Ha'ir. That's mentioned in the Rosh in source number 5. And the Tovei Ha'ir seem to be, and it's brought down in Shulchan Aruch like this as well, people that are elected, either elected or appointed by
Shoftim and Shoftim.
Yeah, by the community. Call it, you know, in the pre-Enlightenment era, the kahila structure, or, you know, some form of communal government that government actually has the authority to carry out serious type of legal measures against the community. Now, all of this, of course, is within the Jewish community. Mordechai as well speaks about the power of this group as being something very very significant, very encompassing. And then I just brought a few pieces here that Shulchan Aruch brings down the Rambam. What's debated here is that the Rishonim that are usually relied upon, like the Rambam, the Rif, and the Rosh, I think it's only the Rambam in this case who actually follows that, like, gives that psak. So it isn't Rov, even though the Shulchan Aruch does bring it. So some people question this whole thing in the Shulchan Aruch, but he does bring it down as that the Beit Din would have, whoever, the, not the Beit Din, the governing body, whoever it is, would, and he brings this Shashat Tzricha Lekach, so on and so forth. The Ramah pulls this back a bit, and another place in Shulchan Aruch seemed to limit this to, number one, people who are in the governing body have to also have a certain level of basum, certain level of kashrut, and called moral standing. He used a language of risha, right? Tovei kahal amunim lasok b'tzacharam yichidim harein kedayanim asurim lo shibeinem misha pasul ladun. Well, pasul ladun is
right,
a much broader category.
But pasul adun mishum risha,
right.
I view that as like limited.
Right. Pasul adun mishum risha. How do you define what that is? Again, not this. I don't know if this necessarily even means a religious or not religious divide. It seems to be more of something that's more moral, you know, corruptedness versus not being corrupted. We're not going to comment on anything to do with politics because that's complicated. And then the other one piece is the Shulchan Aruch Choshen Mishpat. Later, he speaks about this when you have like a Gadol Hador, you have like Rabbanim who are also part of that community. So the governing body might not be able to make decisions on their own. They might actually have to, halacha may get in the way of a legal structure that allows them to do this. So that's kind of one whole angle of this. Rav Kook, in a pretty quoted tshuva, speaks about the government being able to have a malchut, which is what you mentioned before, status of being a melech. He doesn't necessarily speak about death penalty or the ability to carry that out, but he does speak about being given the power, being given the authority that a melech has, and if you take it to its full conclusion. What was that?
As of the covenant he used to, like, that's why you can't protest the government, is because that would be
right.
Them all.
Right.
This is where it comes from.
So that's this piece. I'm still have to go back and look what the context was. What the original question was that he was being asked about this. I don't remember offhand. And that does seem to be, once you get into the level of Melech, so you have the Rambam and you have some other sources, there's a Meiri that I put at the end who talks about Dini HaMalchut Kayamim B'chol Zman V'af B'chol Dor V'Dor Yesh Reshut L'Manhiga Ador G'doli HaRatzo L'Anosh V'Larog Derech Hora'at Sha'ah Al Drachim Shebiyarnu V'Zeh Shinur
T'Torah. It's only Derech Hora'at Sha'ah. They can't institute a death penalty for doing things.
So this is more food for thought. There's obviously a lot more to talk about and to look at. I'll just mention a few things that are just that have been discussed, that have been part of this conversation. So one of the big speakers, actually, against the death penalty right now is Rav Adya Yosef's son, Rav Yitzhak Yosef. And he made a couple of points.
It's kind of surprising to me, because he's...
Yeah. So one of the points that he made... Extreme. Yeah. So one of the points that he made was... was the argument about Jewish terrorism, right? If you have... Okay, so you could talk about... Actually, by the way... I'll tell you what he says. So you could talk about this... you can have this discussion just from the discussion of Rodef in and of itself. You don't even need to come on to the discussion about Sanhedrin, not Sanhedrin. A Rodef is a Rodef. So somebody who's threatening the life of an individual or a group, and then you might... Or you can talk about it from the discussion of Milchama. That's a whole other angle to get into this conversation on. And Rav Goren has this big heter about starting a war on Shabbat because of the nature of the threat, as opposed to a nature of the threat against a people as opposed to an individual. Other ways to talk about this and other ways to look at this. So what he says, his number one point is about once we say we're going to apply this law, then we have to apply it equally to Jews and non-Jews, which is complicated. It's complicated to say that the state is going to, not that those people are not shouldn't be charged and convicted for their crimes, but
it doesn't have to get political. Like there are some things that like Baruch Goldstein, like there's no like, That's terror. Like I'm saying, there's some things where it's complicated.
Right.
Saying,
so the question is more: is this a value that the state wants to have? Does the state want to have a value of being a place that carries out death penalty? That's number one. Number two, he speaks about maybe it has logic for within Israel, but what kind of shockwaves could this have in terms of anti-Semitism, in terms of the safety and security of Jews around the world? He was very strong about that. That he felt that it would make the life of Jews around the world a lot more unsafe, and
he's not wrong.
And create more challenges, security challenges for Jews around the world. It's kind of like we have to think more globally and more broadly about the impact of such a decision.
You wouldn't expect that from someone who calls all Arabs dogs.
No, so there's definitely.